Well, hello there, everyone, and welcome to an episode of Backrow Seating Podcast, the Backrow Seating Podcast, whatever we're deciding to do since this was like a contention point in the last couple episodes. We were not watching a movie this episode. Yes, this is the year in review, the tier list. I don't know, everyone loves tier lists, so I figured since I had already gone through on IMDb, and I'd gone through and reviewed all of the films I'd watched on here, because YMS, one of the big YouTube people that I love to watch, he goes through and he does his IMDb stuff, so you can actually go on there and like see his tier list of stuff he's watched and everything. So I figured I would go ahead and do that just to have like an archive of my rankings and stuff. And while I can't go back, if I'm doing a year in review for 2022, I guess I can't go back and do the 2021 films that we watched. Maybe in the future I'll do like a bonus thing or something. Even though we started that year like super early. Yeah, January, February, March, April. So, but yeah, so we're going to do a quick, I've already got my tier list. I actually started to use one of those tier list makers knowing full well I needed JPEGs of all of these posters. And I was like, it's a podcast. I don't need these. So, I just made a notepad entry and I just wrote down all of the films. So we've got S-A-B-C-D. And we're going to start from the bottom up, but I will tell you, we've got two films in S, we have got seven in A, most of them are in B. But pretty much how I review movies, for those who aren't aware, so this tier list is like 1 out of 5 stars, essentially. For the most part, most films I watch are going to be a 3 or a B. They're going to be middle of the road. And pretty much when I watch movies, they start in the middle. And depending on if they're really good, they'll go up. If they're really bad, they start going down. But generally, if I watch a movie and I enjoy it and it's not offensive to my movie filmmaking brain, generally it stays at a B. So most films that I watch are Bs. If they're pretty good or if they're better, it very rarely are films in my number one, 5 stars, very rarely. So A's, 4 stars, those will be movies that like, they're really good, but they're not like out of this world amazing movies. And then you get to see, which that doesn't necessarily mean they're bad, but they certainly are, They're not terrible. They're okay. They're like middle of the road. If the 3-star is supposed to be middle of the road, that's where my C's are, or like middle of the road. B's are middle of the road, but like not bad. But C's are middle of the road, kind of dipping towards that direction, but they're not fully there yet. So this is very interesting because when I do my reviews, when I watch these for podcasts, so like Matilda, the 1996 version, I watched that in April of 2022. So has my opinion changed of it since then? Well, I don't know. Maybe it has. I don't know. I've had a lot of time to mull over it. Sort of. It's not like I spend every waking moment like reviewing movies over and over again and going, oh my God, maybe I was wrong about Matilda. What do I do? I only brought that up because I've got it on my webpage, and I guess we just watched the musical version on Netflix. So yeah, we're going to start at the bottom with the D's. All right, and already I have to get to explain territory, because the first one on the D list is The King's Daughter, which it's difficult to review these on a grading system based on enjoyment. I freaking loved The King's Daughter. As far as all of these rankings, they're based on filmmaking. Like, is this a good film? King's Daughter is an awful film. Is it an enjoyable film? Hell yes, it's enjoyable. I wasn't even drunk when I was watching it. I was stone cold sober when I was watching it. I can only imagine. I've gotten on Twitter about it. I've tagged YMS, Scoot, and Gael. I tweeted at them and I was like, you guys really need to watch The King's Daughter, because I would love to see how a group of people watches that movie, because it is it's amazing. If you love bad movies, The King's Daughter is amazing. So yes, it gets a D because it's a terrible movie. Usually they are. If a movie is in If a film doesn't even get... Like, think of all the movies that get produced with no problem at all that are bad. Like, it has to be really bad for even a studio to go, okay, you know what, we're not even going to put money into this. That's what The King's Daughter was for so many years. It was in development hell for forever. There was that story, Avatar 2 came out recently, and there was that story, actor, Falco, Edge, what's her first name? Edie Falco. She had filmed it like 4 years ago, and it just came out, but it had been so long that she had thought it had already come out and bombed, and she didn't even realize it, because no one was talking about it for 4 years. I would love to see what, like, Pierce Brosnan, because it was in development hell for years. Did he film his parts in, like, 2018, and it didn't come out until, like, 2021? Like, what did he think was going on in those years that they had this footage, but it wasn't being released and being shopped around? Like, I find that absolutely hilarious, and I would love... There are so many actors in these movies that I watch, I would so love to... Like, I'm an introvert, like, hardcore, but even I would love to, like, sit in a room with somebody else and be like, what were you thinking? What was going through your mind? What was the director on? The King's Daughter is kind of like that. It is like a comedy of... errors, yes, but, like, I don't know, like, what the heckeries, you know? My next film on the D list is, and it will, my child self is like crying right now, Goldmember. It is the lowest ranked of the three Austin Powers movies we watched this year, with Fusion Fall. And, yeah, it is, as an adult, it's funny, because I can watch the first two Austin Powers movies, and there are so many jokes that I got as a kid that were funny to me as a kid, because they were like toilet humor, right? And then there were also simultaneously jokes that went completely over my head on those first two movies. And as I watched them as an adult, I get those jokes, the adult jokes that I didn't get as a kid. I listen to those now and I find them like hilarious because they're good jokes. Goldmember really doesn't have that. Goldmember is, it kind of like reduces the first two films down into like their worst parts. And it's just nothing but like childish humor for the most part. There's nothing to enjoy about it later on in life, you know. Even more so, International Man of Mystery, which I thought was boring like growing up, and that film now I appreciated a whole lot more on a lot of the humor, because a lot of the humor is it's like smart and intelligently written humor, whereas Goldmember really doesn't have much of that. Next up on D is Darkness Falls. So yes, D for Darkness Falls. I can't even remember what it was about this film as a kid that made me watch it more than once, much less made me want to watch it again. It should have been a good sign that I had completely forgotten everything about it, but I mean, whatever. It is what it is, I guess. Anything to say about Darkness Falls? Not really. I guess it is enjoyable in like a bad movie sense. We had a lot of fun. I had a blast recording the audio, especially when we got to the end and I was just like wanting it to be over, and I started like making fun of the main characters. The acting. Yeah, the acting was bad. The premise could be interesting. The mythology of the film, behind the film, it could be interesting if the film itself like adhered to those rules that they were setting up. But I distinctly remember there being plenty of times where, like, they got into the darkness and they didn't die, but other characters went into the darkness and they died instantly. And it's like, the amounts of plot armor in that film is incredible. The final entry for the D-listing, Christmas Unleashed. And this is another one, not so much like The King's Daughter. The King's Daughter is a masterpiece of so bad it's good. Christmas Unleashed is kind of like... mediocre, so bad it's good. I don't know, if I wasn't making jokes and talking into a microphone, I probably would not have enjoyed it at all. If I was just sitting and watching it silently, I would have been miserable. So yes, it is not really good filmmaking. All of the camera angles are flat and uninteresting. The characters are very bland. They're very pretty and perfect, and oh, we can't be bothered to find a dog, so let's have sex in the kitchen instead. You know, your basic Lifetime movie fare, really. Let's see, your C-list. The C-list is going to start with, and again, these are movies that are middle of the road, but leaning towards not so good. So, see, we have International Man of Mystery, which, now that I'm thinking about it, I probably could have upped this to B. This is like a very soft C. I still don't enjoy it as much as The Spy Who Shagged Me, but it's still kind of, you know, it's one of those instances where, sure, they knew the Austin Powers character. I'm fairly certain Austin Powers as a character started off on Saturday Night Live or something. So, like, they understood, like, the character, sort of, but they were still trying to figure out who Austin Powers was and this world that he was in, Dr. Evil, you know. They really came into their own. Spy Who Shagged Me, they understood, like, the character, and Mike Myers understood the character, and the improvisation and directing, it was just a lot better. And then it fell off a cliff for Goldmember, but nevertheless... So yeah, International Man of Mystery, I appreciate it a lot more than I did as a kid. If I were a kid, I'd probably put it on D if tier lists existed back in 2001. But yeah, I can enjoy it, but it's still not, you know, there's a lot of lack in there, I guess. There's a lot lacking, rather. Next up on C, so this upsets me. But I have watched this movie quite a few times since recording the. I watched this in theaters, and I watched it for the podcast like right after it was available on Blu-ray to Japanese audiences. And I've watched it a few times since then. So the next on the C list is Belle, and I feel so bad to say that. So Belle is a very. It is a wonderful movie on the surface. When you get to the deeper character things, it's very sort of bland and vacant, kind of sort of. There's really no for the bombastic emotional climax of the film. Like the film is really, really hoping that the audience is able to be pulled in by Kaho Nakamura's singing as an emotional through line for the film. Because the main character really has no emotional... I mean, she does, but it's not really... You know, we don't feel any of it. It's very, like, bland and, like, vacant, like I said. That's actually a really good description of how I feel about this movie now. Vacant. It has like this glorious facade on the outside. The soundtrack is incredible, and like if you distill this movie down to like as a music video, it's a fantastic thing. But once you open the door and you get inside like the characters and stuff and the emotion, there are some characters that are completely unnecessary in the movie that are like absolutely contradictory. Like her friend who was like he has to be all stoic the whole movie because for some reason he's trying to protect her from something. And like at the end of the film, he starts laughing and it's a good, that is like legitimately jarring. Like to know this character is a dick. And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, I can be happy now. It's like, what the heck? It feels like the film like cheated you almost, even though he's like a know nothing character, but still. So yeah, it's a gorgeous facade. You go inside and it's very vacant. There's no furniture, there's nothing on the walls, there's no decor. And I absolutely hate that, but you know, there are times when I rewatch it and I just skim through the movie and I just go to the big soundtrack moments. And those soundtrack moments are glorious, but it's still very, I don't know. It's a shame because Hosoda usually has like fantastic. He's usually fantastic when it comes to character studies. Not even character studies, just characters in general, like Summer Wars, Wolf Children. Usually very good at like pulling at your heartstrings. I don't know if he was probably too caught up in like the bombast of everything, and like it was such a big story, I guess, in the grand scheme of things. Maybe that might actually be it, because Summer Wars took place in the house. Really. Belle takes place in, like, the globe, as far as the story goes. Shanghai Noon is the next entry on C. Shanghai Noon, it's very much like International Man of Mystery. This was their first movie. They really didn't understand the characters as much as they would in Shanghai Nights anyway. They didn't really understand the world that they were in, which is important because they play very much on the setting for their humor. Not so much in the first movie, but they do it in the second one to fantastic effect sometimes. But yeah, it's very much a case of they could have done better. But I mean, they worked with it felt like a first draft for Shanghai Nights, sort of like International Man of Mystery. Both of those films, they feel very similar to me in that sense. Although I can enjoy Shanghai Noon a lot more than International Man of Mystery. Next up on C is Lightyear. I hate to say this. I always hate it when people criticize movies and they hate movies for stupid reasons, and then I watch it and then I also hate it. Well, you know what? I didn't hate it. There were some fun things in it. But yeah, I have a spiteful side to me, and whenever I hear a film not doing well and everyone has stupid reasons for not watching it, and then I watch it and I don't go against the grain, I hate that. I hate myself for my opinions. But yeah, Lightyear was very it just didn't hit any notes, you know? It was a story, but it never felt emotional. None of the humor felt like it hit at all. I don't recall laughing at any jokes in the movie. They cheat you. You're expecting Zurg to be the villain, and it's Buzz Lightyear in the future, I guess, or from the past. Which I guess subverting your expectations is important these days, but I mean, there was nothing to hint towards that. And if you watch it again, I don't think there's anything to that it doesn't pay off for anything really. I watched Thor Love and Thunder, and I didn't really care for Ragnarok at all. I watched it a second time and I still didn't really care for Ragnarok. And I watched Love and Thunder, and I thought it was at least more palatable than Ragnarok to me. But it was not, I don't know. Disney, my point being, Taika Waititi, Disney has a love affair with this man. And it feels like he's overstayed his welcome, sort of, as far as Disney is concerned. Cause he started off with fantastic gusto. Not even Ragnarok. He did an indie film that was supposed to have been really good. I haven't seen it yet, but he did Jojo Rabbit, which was phenomenal. But that's not a Disney brand, obviously. It could be. Disney owns everything. But yeah, Taika Waititi's character was indicative of everything I didn't really care for the movie. Just a lot of jokes and humor that just none of them landed. None of them were funny. None of the characters, I guess some of the characters are the old grandma with the guns or anything? I guess he was kind of funny, but I mean, I don't know. The movie just felt empty. There was just nothing. It just felt like I was sat in front of a screen and they were just playing something that I couldn't have cared about. Similar to the next entry, see Pinocchio from 1940. I can't stand the Lion King remake because Jon Favreau, the YMS makes a whole big deal about this. Jon Favreau pretty much treats it as a tech demo of all the cool tech stuff he can do in Oculus. And there's no other reason for the live action Lion King to exist other than Jon Favreau telling everybody, oh, look how impressive our technology is. Pinocchio is the same way, but just in 1940. The film really has nothing to it. The characterization is weird or non-existent. The story is kind of eh. I guess some of the imagery can be a bit jarring. Like I said, the scene where they're turning into donkeys, that kind of traumatized me as a kid. Some of the imagery is jarring, but for the most part, they spend 10 minutes just showing off the animations with the Geppetto's clocks. And I guarantee you, at some point, someone at Disney, if not Walt himself, was like, "Oh, this story, Geppetto's a clockmaker. Ooh, here, let's buy the rights so that we can just make a bunch of clocks and animate them and make it look cool and let people see what it's." Because that was back when people didn't appreciate animation, or maybe animation hadn't even existed yet in 1940. So, like, I'm sure they felt the need to, like, show off, like, what they could do. But at the same time, there was nothing in the story. There was nothing in the movie that, like, felt like a good movie, really. It just felt behind the impressive graphics, you know, it was nothing, really. The graphics weren't good. The animation was good. The animation was pretty phenomenal, but that's why this is a C and not a D. now I have to explain away Disney's Pinocchio from 2022 being on C. Luke Evans. I'm not gonna lie, Luke Evans is phenomenal in this movie, and I love him so much. But yeah, it's not. Yeah, again, this is another one of those everyone hates it, and I hate that I don't like it either. But yeah, the acting was okay. I enjoyed a lot of the acting. But aside from that, the story was downright contradictive at some point. The morals of the film, like, Pinocchio discovers halfway through the movie that he can lie to his advantage, and Disney didn't even seem to really notice that. They didn't care. I mean, I guess he was imprisoned, so I guess their ultimate, if you get to, like, the topmost part of that moment, okay, well, he was lying to get out of imprisonment. I guess that's acceptable, but, I mean, read into it a little bit more. Okay, so the next one on the C is probably my most controversial. It might be my most controversial thing on this list. The Nightmare Before Christmas. Okay, so before I can hear the pitchforks. Get it? Because we're on a podcast. I can't see anything. I have to hear it. So yeah, The Nightmare Before Christmas. I can appreciate it for what it is. I love the animation. Again, the claymation stop motion is fantastic. Again, that's largely why this is a C and not a D. But I mean, really, the story is just kind of bland. It meanders. If you don't like the music, it's really not. I don't honestly, if it wasn't for the soundtrack, I don't think anybody would like have watched it this long. It seems like a lot of people enjoy the music more than anything else, and like I know they're one of my friends, they really love the three, like, Hobgoblin kids or whoever they are. So I mean, there are characters that people like, but I mean, it's very, very short too. If they had just added like 10 more minutes to characterization, I mean, they could have made it a lot better, deeper characters and everything. But no, plus the whole infinite, it's a Christmas movie. Come on, don't even. All these people coming at other people saying it's a Halloween movie, get out of here. It's totally a Christmas movie. And then the final entry on C is Matilda the Musical, which was very boring. I guess not very boring. It got boring in like the middle of the film. But I've since gone back in the last week or so. I have gone back and I do like a lot of the soundtrack. I like a lot of the songs on it. So I do appreciate it more from that standpoint. As far as the film goes, I mean, like I said, middle of the road, leaning towards kind of. My favorite segments are the parts where it's like Matilda's imagination and they get to be a lot more creative with like the color palettes and stuff. But when they're not in that dream world, it's just very drab. And I mean, I know that's the point because they're at Trunchbull School, but it feels like the film really comes into its own when like the filmmakers and the actors are having fun. And a lot of that is when they're in scenes where they're allowed to do that. Like the doctor at the beginning, like delivering a baby, like amidst a chorus of soul singers. Like that's like one of the best parts of the movie. But yeah, it's just very. I can appreciate the acting from Trunchbull. My big thing was that, like, it's not the antagonists in the film are not, for the most part, Trunchbull's awful, we find out later on. But, like, most Matilda's family, they're not even that terrible. I mean, they're criminals, but, I mean, they're not, like, as far as we know, they're not, like, abusing her like they were in the first movie. Well, I mean, I guess not. Even in the first movie, they weren't original. They weren't abusing her. But, I mean, they just felt more sinister towards her in the first movie, in the original one. This time, it just seems like she really didn't have it that bad, you know? And I know that it's 2022 when you can't have children, like, you can't depict them in a children's play, like, you know, being mistreated or neglected. But, I mean, it takes away something. Because Matilda is supposed to be, like, a freedom fighter. She's, like, a fighter for justice. And when the things she's battling against, railing against, aren't terrible, like, it really, like, demeans her position. And it makes her seem a lot more... What's the term? It makes her seem a lot less justified in what she's doing, you know? Like, if her parents are awful, awful, awful people, then they're so incredibly neglectful. Okay, she puts glue in her dad's hat, and he has to put it on and get it stuck to his hair. Okay, fine, I can see that, because they're awful people. But when they're not that bad, then she just seems like she's an awful person herself, because, oh, well, did he really deserve that? There's a lot more moral gray area in there. Another thing was the ensemble casting, which I get that it's a play, and plays generally have ensemble casts, because largely they can't focus on just one person, for the most part. That's not a hard and fast rule. But it seems to be like it's in a gray area in between, like, a small cast and a large ensemble cast, because it feels like, for the most part, other than Trunchbull, oddly enough, there's really not... I guess Miss Honey also gets some characterization. But other than those two, there's really not much characterization. The kids are kind of just there. They get a musical number, and that's about it. We don't even get to see... what's her name? The girl with the newt. I can't remember what her name was, but, like, she doesn't even get... She isn't hardly in the film. She has, like, one conversation. She goes to school with Matilda. They have one conversation, and then we get the scene where she puts the newt in the water vase for some reason. That's, we don't even get to see her that much, but, like, we see all these kids that are just kind of there, and the whole thing where none of them obviously are telling their parents how awful this school is, because we see in that musical number, a lot of their parents seem like normal people that would be abhorred that their kids are going to a school where one of the forms of punishment is the chokey, and, like, nobody is saying anything, like, what the hell, why wouldn't you? Excuse me. Okay, so... That's our C's. The B's, we're already at like 30 minutes, so I'm going to go through these, because these are run-of-the-mill movies that are good, and, like, there's not much... If I go through one, I'll probably be just very brief with these. B, the first movie we saw this year, Encanto. That was a B. I like the music. A lot of interesting characters, very fun. A lot of the imagery was fantastic, especially with Louisa singing with the donkeys flying through the sky. My Dog Skip, pretty good movie. If I had any gripe about it, it's how much it waters down segregation in the 1930s, 40s. No, it was more like the 60s. It was after World War II, wasn't it? Or the 50s, when was it? Because his neighbor goes off to war, but I can't remember what war he went off to, if it was Vietnam or World War II. Turning Red. Turning Red's excellent movie. Matilda, the original, good movie. Spy Who Shagged Me, my favorite Austin Powers movie. Fusion Falls' favorite Austin Powers movie. Probably the only one he would watch again. Moulin Rouge. Atlantique. Scooby-Doo 2. I could probably see that maybe, well, no, that's not going to be an A. that's more of a credibility thing. I don't want to be the person who, oh, what's this person's views on movies? Oh, they put Scooby-Doo 2 as B or A. Ugh. Okay, so yeah, it's definitely not like the best movie ever. Zootopia is mostly like missed opportunity, and I'm really excited to watch Zootopia Plus, because Zootopia, they set up like such a massive world, and they only showed us like a bite-sized chunk of it, and I think they could have been a little bit more imaginative, or maybe not imaginative, because there was plenty imaginative, they could have been a little bit more creative with like showing us the world, and why the hell they need a SWAT team at the end of the movie. Shanghai Nights, I said pretty much what I was going to say when I was talking about Shanghai Noon. Shanghai Nights is very fun. It's one of those movies I could watch forever, and it's never not funny. 8.5 from Fellini. It's an okay movie. It was very long, probably too long. But I mean, it was great filmmaking, if nothing else. I could see myself putting it in the C column simply because it was very long and grating kind of to watch sometimes. But I never felt bored. It wasn't like, it wasn't like Matilda the Musical where at some point I was legitimately like, oh my God, hurry up. I never felt that despite how long-winded it was. There are films like that where it definitely, like, if the filmmaking is good, it's a lot easier to sit through grading films, you know, because you're always, like, there's always something to watch, and your brain is always being engaged, you know. Next up is Licorice Pizza. I like the acting. Good filmmaking. The Batman. Yeah. I mean, I wish it was spectacular like everyone was saying it was, but it just wasn't. Sorcerer's Stone, really good movie. Harry Potter. 500 Days of Summer. I really liked the stylism in that movie. It was very creative, the filmmaking. Chamber of Secrets, Harry Potter, also good. I probably could have put that on A, if I'm being completely honest. Speak No Evil. Now that I'm saying that, I probably could have put that on C. Yeah, now that I'm looking at it. You know what? We'll put Speak No Evil on C. the filmmaking was okay. Some of the characters are really stupid. But yeah, that's kind of the point, I guess. Okay, so yeah, Speak No Evil, put that on C. Corpse Bride. I do have that on B ahead of Nightmare Before Christmas. Corpse Bride was a lot more focused in its storytelling. Nightmare was very broad. It was, what is Christmas? What is the spirit of Christmas, and how does it contrast with Halloween? Corpse Bride is a lot more focused. Corpse Bride is about a guy and essentially a woman, Victoria, but it is a lot more focused. The songs were okay. Again, the animation was fantastic, but where this jumps ahead of Nightmare is definitely the characters felt more deep. They felt like actual characters. Jack Skellington doesn't feel like a character. Jack Skellington feels like a vehicle through which we're entering a world. He's like a silent video game protagonist who's just kind of there. Halloween's really good. Obviously not A or S tier good, but it's still pretty good. I really would like to see like later films. Maybe. I know a lot of Halloween movies, it's kind of like hit or miss. The Little Prince, fantastic little movie. You can't find it anywhere. I tried to find it to like look for a Blu-ray copy somewhere, but it's nowhere. It's not on Netflix. It's not streaming anywhere. And I'm assuming that might be because it's a French movie, but it has a lot of star power in the English dub. I have no idea why you can't find it anywhere. And then the final entry on B is the penultimate episode for 2022, Strange World. Nothing spectacular, but a good movie overall. Oh wait, that was the final movie. I'm sorry. I watched it in Matilda the Musical at the same time. I forgot which order I watched them in. Oh, wait, no, I watched Prince of Egypt and Matilda in the same order. Okay, so Strange World was the final movie of the year. I'm sorry. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, but it was very uninspiring. It felt like, and I've talked to friends who have watched it since then, and they felt the same way. It felt like a hodgepodge of other ideas, and it really didn't feel like its own movie. But nonetheless, it was very creative. It was pretty to look at, and the characters were fun. I've seen reviews. People were saying, like, there's no characterization. There's plenty of characterization. What are you talking about? They all feel like characters. They all feel like unique characters, more importantly. All right, so to the A-list. We got Seven, The 400 Blows. Really good French movie. I could see where some people feel like it feels like it drags on, but I don't think that way. It has excellent build up for the end of the film. There are a lot of movies where there are a lot of movies where things happen and then the same thing happens and then something gets blown out of proportion just because, oh well, that's how it has to happen. Like, using the 400 Blows as an analog, if it wasn't as good as it was, in most movies, the kid would, like, do one thing bad, and, like, the parents would overreact and be like, oh, you're going to live on the farm, or whatever, whatever school he goes off to in the countryside. Like, characters will get outraged just to advance the plot along. Like, that is an excellent use for overreactive characters because that they just progress the plot. But the 400 Blows, the buildup is so gradual. Like, we see this kid doing bad thing after bad thing and bad thing and bad thing. Finally, we see his parents get more and more fed up with things and how manipulative this kid is. And it feels like so much like a natural progressive. It's the 400 Blows. It's the 400 ways of him, like, misbehaving. And it's like a beautiful, gradual, like, crescendo of, like, badness in a kid. So that by the end of the film, we totally understand his parents' point of view, but we also understand how he feels slighted, because, oh, well, you know, if I recall, the ultimate point is that he doesn't, it's like in his nature, he's not meaning to be bad, but, like, it's just who he is. So yeah, 400 Blows, pretty great. Titan AE, pretty fantastic. So about Matilda the Musical, one of my gripes about that is that, yes, I love the soundtrack, but a lot of the songs, they don't really tell a story. They're just kind of there. Like, When I Grow Up, when the kids are singing, like, what does that song do for the story? Nothing. It's just there. I mean, I guess maybe it gives us some characterization, but it really doesn't even get that, because we don't see how the characters behave or act in any way. We just, oh, well, when I'm a grow up, I want to climb trees and watch cartoons until my eyes go square. It doesn't really tell us anything about the characters. Titan AE, on the other hand, it's like a phantasmagorical space opera where all of the songs, literally in the lyrics, they're telling the story as it's going on. It's like Show, Don't Tell. But it's like here, don't tell, you know, like you're hearing the music and the music is conveying what's happening in the plot. And it's fantastic. When I was in college, I actually wrote a screenplay that was similar to Titan AE, because it, like, that style of filmmaking just, like, really got me and, like, it inspires me so much. But yeah, solid characters, solid story. Everything makes sense. The most contrivance thing would be them getting captured by the Dredge, Kale and Akima, and then that's like a plot cul-de-sac. But even then, we're learning more about the Dredge motivations, I guess. That's probably the weakest point of the movie, but even then, that's like not saying much, considering like the whole movie's great. Next one is Inside Llewyn Davis. Fantastic Coen Brothers movie. It would be a weird day if I watched a Coen Brothers movie and it was not S or A. I probably shouldn't say it that bluntly, because, like, I'm sure there are some Coen Brothers movies that are, like, B material. But, like, I know Fargo. I don't know if Fargo would be an S, but it would definitely be an A. But yeah, Llewyn Davis. Oscar Isaac. heart symbol. I love Oscar Isaac. Fantastic acting. It's sort of like the 400 blows, but like it's a massive gradual buildup of like a character's ego, only to have it like yanked out from under him and like his heart ripped out in the emotional climax of the movie. And it is like so amazingly well done and so unexpected. Like in every film you watch, you expect the main character to like win and become victorious at the end. That does not happen at all in Llewyn Davis. And he's sitting there playing his guitar for that producer guy in Chicago. And he plays it, and he's so like unsure of himself when he starts the song, but as he plays the song, he gets more and more sure of himself, and he finishes it, and he stares the producer in the eye because he is so confident. Everyone in the audience is expecting the producer to say, yes, we want him to succeed. And the producer doesn't even say no. He doesn't say that he doesn't like it. He does, but he says, I don't see any money here. Like, it's not even a question of whether or not Oscar Isaac's Llewyn Davis is like, it's not a question of how good he is. There's no money in what he can do. And that alone, like, devalues him. And, like, just the crestfallen look on his face. Oh, my God. It's a great movie. John Goodman's character is also great. He's a dick, but he's also great. A is Men. Fantastic acting. Jesse Buckley, that's who her name is. Fantastic acting by Jesse Buckley and by the other guy, who I can't remember, but he plays all the other characters. Superb acting. This movie is like a fantastic use of atmosphere in a movie. And like there's just this constant feeling of dread throughout the whole movie. I think I mentioned my one major thing was, I think it was the flashbacks. It felt a little bit not cohesive to the main story. And plus the ending is a little bit... You can't talk about Men without talking about the ending. The end is very surreal, and there's a certain point where, well, I mean, it's an art. Movies are an art form at the end of the day, and you can use your art for whatever you want. I can see where a lot of people would be turned off by that. But I mean, I understand the message. It was a bit too abstract, maybe, but I mean, I put it on A. It's certainly not like a deal breaker. It was certainly shock value, if nothing else, which I'm fairly certain was the point of that. Like it just got like it's burned into your retinas and your brain, which is the point. The ultimate goal of any movie is to be memorable. Like I don't care, like, regardless of intention, regardless of how good or bad a movie is, the ultimate goal is for it to be memorable. And that's why The Room succeeds. Because is it a good movie? Hell no. Is it a bad movie? Yes. But is it memorable? Hell yeah. That should be what every artist tries to look for, is whether or not a piece is memorable. Why do you think Vincent van Gogh is still talked about to this day? Because his art, when you see it, it burns into your brain and it's memorable. His style of art, Monet and his lilies, his style of art, Gustav Klimt, his style and art, it's all memorable for a reason. I find that that's a good marker to go by, because it kind of ignores whether or not anything is good or bad. It sort of ignores that. Is it memorable? Yes. Like The King's Daughter. Is it good or bad? Well, who cares? It's memorable. I mean, regardless of everything else, that should be the goal. Next is The Sea Beast. Fantastic movie. Great animation. It was like 3D animation in the West, but it didn't look like every other Disney film made, which is good. That is a legitimate like thing I look for now in a Western 3D animation movie. I don't want all the characters to always look like Disney characters. And even Disney does it still. You know what? Strange World didn't look like Frozen. I mean, I guess it kind of did. I don't know. That's a wonky criticism. But yeah. The best thing about the Sea Beast is the scale. It really felt like it was this massive world.
And there were all these... Oh, okay, that wasn't the best part. The best part was the kaiju battle with the freaking giant sea beast and the crab. That was fantastic. But yeah, the characters are all fun. The story's great. The ending, good, is a good ending. Next up is The Departed, which honestly, I was going to put this as an S, and... Having watched it for the podcast, it's certainly not as good as I remember it being, which isn't to say it's bad, because it's an A. It's still really good. But since the first time I watched it, between the time I first watched it, or the time I last watched it, and when I watched it for the podcast, in between those two times, I went and I watched Goodfellas. And I can't remember what I said about The Departed in relation to Scorsese's other films, but I think I might have put it in the same class as Goodfellas. And watching it again, that is not the case. The Departed is a great movie. It is not Goodfellas good. And I would be interested to go back and watch a lot of Scorsese's other films, like Casino, and like really compare The Departed to those, because The Departed. The biggest thing about The Departed is the twist. When Leo DiCaprio was shot, and like that's the main character getting shot, obviously, and it's like such a big, massive thing. Like it just blows your frickin' mind. But I mean that's the film is so massive, like, it really, if you want it to be fantastic, there needs to be more to it than just that one scene, right? So it's a great movie. I'm not trying to say it's bad, but it's certainly not on the same caliber as like a Goodfellas. The Prince of Egypt is the final in the A's. Fantastic soundtrack, great story. I mean, obviously, it's a story that's been told for like 4,000 years now. Of course, it's a good story. It's a good story, and I really enjoyed that they made it like a they made it a generational thing, but also like a brother versus brother thing, and like they did a really good job of like creating that feeling of like conflict, and these two people hate that they have to fight one another. It's fantastic. The score by Hans Zimmer is amazeballs. The voice acting, albeit white, is really good. Definitely some issues with the representation, but nonetheless, it's a pretty good movie. Okay, so we've reached the grand finale of the tier list. We've got two S films. And if you've watched every episode, hopefully you were able to tell which two films haven't popped up yet. But if you haven't, well... we're about to blow your mind, so, well, maybe not, because these are both S-tier films that everyone should love and adore forever. WALL-E! Yes, my favorite Pixar movie, favorite Disney movie. WALL-E does so much with so little dialogue. To this day, it astounds me just how perfect of a movie that is, almost. I very seldom say a movie's perfect, and even for these two, I probably wouldn't call them perfect, but they're like they're so close. I hate giving anything such an absolutist result, because there's always a chance that that might not be the case. But WALL-E is pretty much, I can almost guarantee you that when I die, like the day before I die, if I were to watch WALL-E, I would love it as much as I do now. So like, it's as close to being perfect as possible. But yeah, WALL-E's great. The use of music, The characterization of characters who say no words, who are robots. They're not even humans, and they give them character. It's so great. The storyline is cool, is really good. There's no plot armor. They literally, like, they all but kill WALL-E, and it's only because Eve is able to put him back together. using methods that we saw at the beginning of the film. Like, it wasn't she just decided, oh, well, you know what, I'm gonna fix him, and I know how, because I'm perfect. Like, she saw him fix himself earlier in the movie, so she knew where to get those parts. It also revives Hello Dolly and makes that financial calamity at Disney almost worth it. I forgot about that. So yeah, WALL-E just about as perfect. Another movie that we watched this year that is just about perfect, and as soon as I watched it for the first time, was right there on my list of like top five favorite films of all time. Everything Everywhere All at Once. This movie, fantastic. And I've watched it so many times since I watched it for the podcast for the first time, and it never lacks in how great it is. I am so happy that it's getting Golden Globe and Emmy buzz. I hate that I care about that, but nonetheless, I always care. I always care what the Oscars say, even though I hate that about myself, that I care about that. I mean, I was psyched that year that Parasite won Best Picture. That was amazing. I love Parasite. Everything All at Once. For as massive and as broad as that film is, it has no business being as cohesive as it is. Like, it's astounding. And to be fair, my one critique is that I remember distinctly the first time watching it, it was a little bit labyrinthine at first, trying to understand the universe and multiverse concept. But one, I was watching a podcast and I was recording one and I was talking, so it's very possible that that was just me. Although I watched it with my mom at some point, and she needed clarification too, so yeah, I think that was just the film. But they do a good enough job like staggering it out and you picking up little by little more and more as it goes along. The characters are great. Storyline's great. The ending is divine. Just a great movie. It's one of my all-time favorites. It's not quite Synecdoche, New York, but it does kind of get at sort of the same beats. Although Synecdoche, New York deconstructs life itself, really. Everything Everywhere All at Once kind of deconstructs the meaning of life, I guess. Or the lack thereof, I suppose. So, I mean, they're sort of similar, but not so much. But, yeah. Fantastic movie. Definitely my top of the year. Although, I still haven't seen, like, The Ghosts of Inisherin, which is supposed to be fantastic. I haven't seen The Fablemans. There's a lot of films I haven't seen from this year. But, as of right now, Everything Everywhere All at Once, definitely up there. So, that'll be it for this. The tier list episode. The 2022 tier list. And I will see you guys next year when we do the 2023 one. I look forward to recording more and more podcasts. And if you guys want to tag along, that's awesome. I look forward to your companionship and watching a bunch of movies together, because that's a great thing to do. Thanks for watching. I'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.